Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you. I'd like to talk to you today about quite an exciting new project that we've been working on, which is electronic support for public health, a vaccine adverse event reporting component. And this is work done under the umbrella of our CDC Center of Excellence in Public Health Informatics, which is a collaboration between Harvard Medical School, Children's Hospital, the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, Atrus Health, which is a medical provider group, and the Brigham and Women's Hospital. And what we took on was the issue of vaccine surveillance. And as this public health audience knows, vaccine use is prolific, it's incredibly important. Over 200 million vaccines given per year. 95% of young people get 8 or more vaccines. New vaccines continually being introduced. And accurate detection of adverse events is really essential. Why? Because adverse events are seen as highly problematic because they hurt the healthy. And to know what's going on with vaccines is essential to guide policymakers in who should get vaccines and when, and to assure the safety of the national vaccine programs, which are so essential, as we know, to our public health system. The problem is that the vaccine safety data that you get from the clinical trials is often incomplete and doesn't fully address the question. Why? Because the trials are done with controlled populations that are small relative to the size of the ultimate population that will be vaccinated. And therefore, they have limited power to detect rare or idiosyncratic adverse events. This has led to vaccine surveillance systems, which really come into two flavors. One is active surveillance, which consists of large, rigorous, multi-center epidemiological studies, where you actively go to seek out people who have complications. Often you have to predefine what complication you're looking for, and you can apply rigorous statistical methods to determine if, in fact, there is increased risk or not. And the premier example of this is CDC's Vaccine Safety Data Link program. On the other side is there's passive surveillance systems which depend upon spontaneous reports from clinicians or from patients, drug companies, whenever a purported adverse event is detected. And the beauty of these systems is that they can detect any kind of adverse effect, and therefore you can find the very rare things that you haven't been able to predefine for your active surveillance system. And the big example of this is the VAERS program run by CDC and FDA. And let me focus on that a bit because that's what we're going to elaborate upon. VAERS is the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. It's a collaboration that's been in place since about 1990 between FDA and CDC in order to solicit these spontaneous reports. Originally it was by telephone, mail, fax. These days there's a website that clinicians can go to, or anybody, as I said, anybody can actually go to it. And if you drill down this website, you'll find a electronic form over here to complete to report your adverse event. So the VAERS system is wonderful in some ways, insofar as it does have the capacity and has detected new, unusual, or rare vaccine events, and can also sometimes find increases in known problems, but it suffers some major weaknesses. Namely, there's the problem of underreporting, which is that there are three phases before a report can actually get to VAERS. Namely, the clinician has to recognize that the patient suffered an adverse effect due to the vaccine, so that often doesn't take place. Number two, they have to know there is a place that they can report it to, that somebody wants to know about this. And number three, they have to overcome that burden of initiation to find the website, to go ahead and fill out all this detailed information. So there's quite a high energy of activation to actually use VAERS. And once you do get reports from VAERS, their statistical relevance is not known because you often don't have the denominator. You don't know how many people were vaccinated or how many doses were given. And it's not clear what to compare the adverse event rate to. Is just because somebody suffered Guillain-Barré syndrome, is that actually an increase over what would have happened if the person hadn't been vaccinated? And so those are the difficulties with VAERS. And this led to our project, which say, can we combine some of the best elements of active surveillance and passive surveillance in order to get the completeness of active surveillance combined with the ability to detect rare events, as well as get that clinical nuance that you can get from passive surveillance. And in so doing, improve the efficiency and usability by integrating surveillance into the electronic medical record system. And so what we came up with is what we're calling computer-assisted, clinician-directed surveillance. And so let me tell you how that follows. We chose, because we wanted to integrate this process into the electronic medical record itself so that it can be part of the workflow of the clinician when they're actually seeing patients, we chose to leverage our ESP platform. ESP is a separate set of software and architecture that we independently created about 2 or 3 years ago to automate the process of notifiable disease detection and reporting. And I'll be talking a little bit more about that project at tomorrow morning at 8:30. But the way this ESP works in a nutshell is that it surveys electronic medical record data to find notifiable conditions, and when it finds it, it sends automatic HL7 reports over to the state health department. And currently ESP reports on TB, viral hepatitis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, PID, and has reported over 2,000 cases in the year and a half that it's been active. ESP is currently, it's installed in Atrius Health, which is a large multi-practice, multi-site ambulatory practice based in Eastern Massachusetts. There are 27 different sites. They use the Epicare EMR. We serve about 600,000 patients, which is 10% of the population in Massachusetts, and have over 750 docs. And there's one ESP server that gathers information from this entire system. So here's what ESP has and how it works. You begin with the practice EMR with the doc in front of their computer, and on a nightly basis, the electronic medical record system exports data on every single encounter from the previous 24 hours over to an ESP server. And that includes diagnoses, lab codes, medications, vital signs, demographics. These are mapped into universal nomenclatures on the way in. And once they're on the server, they can be analyzed currently for notifiable conditions, but what I'll show you is that we'll start analyzing them for vaccine adverse events as well. And once it does find an event of interest, right now it sends over an HL7 notifiable disease case report over to the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. So our job before us was to add vaccine safety surveillance to this infrastructure, to this ESP system. And our goal was to detect possible adverse effects after vaccines, prompt the responsible clinician and seek their endorsement and comments, and should they agree, submit a pre-populated electronic report to VAERS of the clinician-endorsed adverse effect. And this is work that's being supported by AHRQ as an add-on to CDC's funding of ESP, and the PI for this project is Ross Lazarus. So here's how it works. What ESP does is it finds every person who gets a vaccine and then prospectively follows them for the next 30 days. It looks to see, within that 30-day period following any vaccine, does that patient present for another kind of encounter? Any encounter. It could be an urgent care visit, could be a regular visit, could be a med refill, anything at all. And if there is a new encounter, ESP takes a look and see, in that new encounter, what sort of ICD-9 codes are there, laboratory orders, laboratory results, allergy entries, new medications, what have you. And if it finds anything, it then does a query on the patient's historical record to say, is this a new problem or not? This patient is popping up with a new low platelet count. Is that a new problem or not? If it's an old problem, just forget about it, discard that issue. If it's a new problem, go take the next step, which is to send a message off to that patient's clinician saying, please comment, do you think this is real or not? And if the clinician concurs, send an HL7 report over to VAERS. Here's how we try to construct the logic. So the system does build off lab results and ICD-9s and allergies and meds, but here's the ICD-9 logic. What we did is we took every single ICD-9 that there is out there. In our system, there were 13,500 of them. And what we wanted to do was to triage these ICD-9s to be dealt with in different ways by ESP in order to assure some sort of credibility and high positive predictive value of the purported adverse events that we'd be showing to the docs. So of those 13,500 ICD-9 codes, 78 are associated with adverse events already. These are ICD-9 codes we took basically from the vaccine safety data link, which does its research within the ICD-9 environment. And so these are pre-validated ICD-9s that VSD, the vaccine safety data link, has been using, things like seizures, Guillain-Barré, interception, so on and so forth. If a patient pops up with one of these ICD-9 codes after their vaccine within the specified time period, then we're going to send that query off the clinician. And because these are, by definition, high probability events of importance and concern to public health, if that clinician fails to respond to our query, we're going to send it off to CDC and FDA anyway. So that's the way we're dealing with these high probability, high risk, high importance events. The second category of people was things that might be novel adverse events associated with a vaccine. Hey, maybe this vaccine causes myocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart, or increased swollen glands, or laryngitis, but maybe not. And so these ones, if one of these IC9 pops up within 30 days of the vaccine, then what we'll do is we'll query the clinician and allow them to be the arbiters of whether or not we send that report or not. If they agree that yes, this could be an vaccine adverse event, we'll send it. If they say no, we'll stop. And the rest, almost 12,000 other RC9s, we simply felt would be very low probability that they could be caused by a vaccine. It's like a broken bone, a medication refill, a periodic health exam, a pap smear, so on and so forth. So we just tossed those right out. And again, this was to assure that if we did send something in front of that clinician's face, that very valuable face time, we wanted it to be a high credibility event. And so these 12,000 RC9s, we just tossed them right out. So here's a couple of examples of workflow in action. Day zero, the patient gets a flu vaccine. Day nine, patient pops up with routine lab work. They have a creatinine at 2.3, so a measure of kidney function that's about 2.5 times normal. So go ahead and check the patient's past visits. It turns out their last creatinine a few months ago was 2.2. Even though 2.3 is slightly higher than 2.2, which would suggest that it's worse, so it's not sufficiently worse that we'd be worried about it. We just stop. Example two. Day zero, a patient gets a measles vaccine. Day six, the patient gets diagnosed with meningitis on the basis of an ICD-9 code. We take a look at the patient's past encounters. They never had an ICD-9 code for meningitis before. This is not a chronic meningitis patient. Send a message up to the patient's doc. Think this was related to the vaccine? The patient says yes, adds their comments, and we send an HL7 report to VAERS. Here's an example of the letter that's sent to the clinician inside their clinical in-basket. The fields in red and capitals are the ones that are automatically inserted into this, what would otherwise be a form letter. They're inserted by ESP based upon the actual clinical information. So, dear Dr. Jones, your patient Bob Wiggins may have suffered an adverse effect from a recent vaccine. Bob Wiggins was diagnosed with meningitis on August 12th, 7 days after receiving a measles vaccine. If you think the meningitis might have been due to the vaccine, we can automatically submit a report to CDC, FDA, VAERS program on your behalf. And then you see the doc can throw in their comments there if they want. They can describe it a little bit more. And we then can and can choose to submit. Or if they think we're out to lunch, they can decline. There actually is a second box if they want to decline and give the reason why they're declining. That's there as well, but I didn't include it on the slide. If we do send a message to VAERS, it goes over in HL7 2.3.1. We use FINAMES to send it over, and we report on the name, the gender, the date of birth, contact info, the doc who's involved, the vaccine name, the lot number, the date of administration, the site of administration, if we have that data, the adverse event, when it happened, what its value is, and the clinician comments. So this program is in under active implementation as we speak. It's still very much a work in progress. So just an example of what we're finding so far. This is from 1 year's worth of data from January 1st to December 31st of last year. 600,000 patients, 45 vaccines, almost 400,000 doses given to almost 200,000 people, and 3,621 possible reactions using the ICD-9 and lab abnormality criteria. The idiosyncratic reaction code is still being implemented. And to give you some flavor what some of those events are, everything ranging from some very serious things. This is basically an allergic reaction on the order of the pathway towards anaphylaxis. Seizures, abnormal labs, fevers, and so on and so forth, or just a hypersensitivity or post-immunization reaction. If you take a look at some of the comparative event rates, I think some interesting things emerge. This is very rough data. It still requires a lot of validation and analysis to understand, but some of the interesting things that we found so far is the event rate for when you put four different agents into a single shot is higher than when you put three different agents into a single shot. That's actually well known. In fact, the vaccine safety data link found a similar pattern that the four condition vaccine had a higher event rate than the three condition vaccine, in particular with regard to seizures, and therefore it actually led to a recommendation from the Committee on Immunization Practices to stop recommending this four valent vaccine, to go just with the three. And a similar pattern over here with the fourfold vaccine with diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, and H flu had a higher rate of reactions than the three. Flu shot seems pretty good. The pneumonia shot a little bit worse. Don't draw any big conclusions from these. This is very, very rough data. So where are we at and where we're going? The ESP Verisk module, as I said, is still actually being actively programmed and validated. We do have the messaging protocol worked out. It's been successfully tested. We've been able to send messages over to test messages to Verisk. We've also been able to send test messages over to clinicians. So the infrastructure for the messaging is in place. And as soon as we get the system up and rolling, which we hope will be sometime early fall, we're going to be setting up a cluster randomized trial where different practices within Atrius, when we said this was this group with 27 different ambulatory practices, some will get the Verisk module, some will not. And we'll compare the number of reports that are generated through ESP versus the number that come out spontaneously, both with regard to number and with regard to quality. And that's where we're at right now. This is the work of many, many different people, some of whom are acknowledged over here, and thank you for listening.
I just have one. I thought it was nice that you actually provide them a space to physicians and send them the report if they want to send it a date of time, why date of time. So kind of what's the system to actually respond to the system? And when they do report, or what they can actually report, they're losing date of time. And if you haven't already, do you have plans to evaluate the patient's date of time to kind of see how to change your automated process?
Sure. Great. So, great questions with regard to what proportion of people accept the reporting offer versus which decline and why. So, stay tuned. This is still work that's actually being actively programmed. We haven't got to the phase of messaging real live docs seeing real live patients. We're still trying to refine the vaccine adverse event trigger or alert logic, so that we don't flood docs with inappropriate messages. The system is actually built on a precursor system, which is much simpler, which was operating inside of our practice, and we found that the acceptance of that system was very high, to the point that when that study elapsed, the clinicians actually asked for the infrastructure to be kept going, even though it was off the study period. So the preliminary sense is that it's pretty positive. I said there were 3,500 events that we found. If you extrapolate that over to a practice with 750 docs over the course of a year, it turns out that the number of alerts per doc per month is going to be very small. It's going to be less than one. So we don't think that thus far, where we're at so far, it's going to be a huge burden for the docs. And so we think it'll be okay. The key is going to be how good is the logic. If the logic is good, I think we'll be fine. If the logic is bogus, then people will rebel.
Hi. I like your introduction that you compared the properties of Verisk to the vaccine safety database. What little I know about the vaccine safety database suggests that doses, of course, before it's period, that you keep beyond those of standard time and symptoms. So that if you suddenly think, oh my gosh, there's TMRA and something that was going to be in Arizona,
so I think that a couple of different angles on that. One is that we've tried to be pretty liberal in defining the range of idiosyncratic reactions. So I think that's be pretty broad. On the other hand, what we find with a lot of these reactions is that they're so rare that even our population of 600,000 actually is not big enough to do reliable assessment for very rare events like Guillain-Barré. And that therefore you actually need the larger infrastructure of the VSD, of Vaccine Safety Data Link, which I think has 8 different HMOs participating right now. So they're an order of magnitude larger than us, and therefore much more appropriately powered to do that kind of work. The same data that's feeding into us is actually feeding into our contribution to Vaccine Safety Data Link. We are a VSD site, and so in that sense we do have a window onto what they're seeing, but they're just much more able to do it in a rigorous fashion than we are. So again, what we might find is that the suggestion that there's something there, VSD, take a closer look. Please. That's good points. Thank you. Thank you. Hi. So I think it's still being worked out, but the way we think of it right now, it's a single alert per day, and it does specify what it feels the potential reactions are.
More questions? No. Great, thank you very much.
Thank you.